Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, Your Financial Choices listeners. I'm Matt Petrozelli, President and CEO of Valley National Financial Advisors. I'm filling in for the wonderful and knowledgeable Lori Siebert, who is not going to be on tonight, unfortunately. I'm very lucky that as the CEO, my office is right next to Lori's. So anytime I find I need an answer, I can get my free Your Financial Choices advice right at my disposal. So she will be back next week. Markets today moved to the upside. The Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ all notched gains to close at close to all-time highs. Fed minutes still show a divided FOMC, but bond markets are signaling possible rate cuts in 2026, especially with Chairman Powell's term expiring in May. Oil was up 4% on J.D. Vance's hawkish comments towards Iran, and cryptocurrency continues to be in correction mode as Bitcoin closed down 2% at $66,000 a coin. I'm really excited today because I want to share with you some interesting advice that I've learned throughout my 25 years in financial services. Now, some of these stories have taught me valuable lessons about investing, about leadership, and about working with people and building a company. But really, the title Sales to CEO is about going from a green New York City broker to celebrating my 15th year this year at Valley National, 8 years of which I've been CEO. So I want today's show to be fun, informative, and beneficial for you, the listener. Remember, we will stay on broad topics today and not specific investments. Should you have any questions for me or for Lori, that matter, related to today's show or in general, feel free to email us at yourfinancialchoices.com. So, my journey started from sales to CEO is really like the movie Slumdog Millionaire. Well, I wasn't growing up in an Indian slum, but if anybody has seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire, it's about a gentleman who grows up in India, has all of these challenging life experiences, only to go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which was a show where you answer various questions, and he was able to answer those based on his life experiences. And I really feel like my career journey has prepared me and taught me to be a phenomenal financial advisor, but also a great leader of Valley National Financial Advisors because of the experiences that I've had. So today I want to walk you through that journey a little bit, share some really interesting stories about how I've learned key attributes of investing, and then dive a little bit deeper into those key attributes of investing and how that may help you, the listener, relate to experiences that you've had in investing, experiences that you've had with friends and family and colleagues. So when I graduated Lehigh, I set off to New York City to become an investment broker, and I got licensed, and that journey was interesting, to say the least. To quote the movie Wall Street, when Bud Fox's dad is saying, "Are you a salesperson?" He goes, "No, I'm a broker." He goes, "Do you get on the phone and ask people for money?" He says, "Yes, I do." And he says, "Well, then you're a salesperson." And so I really think that we've got an opportunity to take that experience and learning products, services, people. And then I transitioned to Fidelity Investments, and that's where I would say I really learned my craft. Fidelity Investments, which is a large discount brokerage firm, I really had great mentorship there, great leadership, and I started becoming less of a salesperson and more of a financial advisor. After the global financial crisis, I transitioned to a large bank known as HSBC, which is a global bank, and I did some private banking and investing for them. And then in 2011, I transitioned here to the Lehigh Valley, joining Valley National Financial Advisors, which is really a boutique, specialized investment, tax, financial planning firm that specializes in helping individuals and families achieve really high productive goals and dreams. And then 8 years ago, I became the CEO, and today I lead a firm that has over $1.35 billion in assets, has great advisors like Lori Siebert and others who you hear on our radio show every day. And so the stories that I've learned over the last 25 years are really going to make the foundation of today's show. Before I get started, just a little bit more about me. I am a Lehigh Valley resident. And very proud to say that both of my two children were born here in the Lehigh Valley, and we are raising them here. I think the Lehigh Valley is on a renaissance right now, both from an economic perspective, business perspective, the amount of business investment that's coming into the Lehigh Valley, the influx of people that have been coming to the Lehigh Valley from the major cities has really positively impacted our environment. And I'm excited to be a part of that. I'm excited to be a part of that business community. And I'm also excited to lead a firm that gets to participate and help families manage their wealth and success. So one of the biggest life lessons that I've learned when it comes to investing over the last 25 years is that wealth is built slowly and quietly. People rarely make money overnight. Okay. And in all the interactions I've had throughout my career, anybody that I've worked with who's successful has built wealth from a ground up approach. Okay. Whether they're a business owner, whether they've had a long career at a corporation, they've made strategic investments, they've had partners along the way. And, you know, that's been the case both, you know, locally, as I've seen here in the Lehigh Valley, and also globally, as I've seen at large banks. So it's really been an interesting process to see. So wealth is built slowly and quietly. Investing at times is not exciting. Investing at times is not a high-fly endeavor, although they sell headlines in newspapers. They sell spots on CNBC and Bloomberg. Everybody wants to talk about the hot investment. But it's really the quiet investments that are behind the scenes. It's the discipline that I'm going to talk about later in the show, about dealing with volatility, about diversifying, about reinvestments, about how to handle dividends, and how to be disciplined in dollar cost averaging, how to get tax deferred, tax free, tax after tax rates of return, and really the tools that are available to the investor to make that happen. The first topic I want to talk to you about is reinvesting and compounding interest. So I was a young advisor at Fidelity Investments, and I was working with a gentleman who was maybe in his 40s, and he was talking about his dad. His dad, like many people here in the Lehigh Valley, very blue-collar, worked for the union on the Pratt & Whitney helicopter assembly line for a long period of time, and he took a small percentage of his paycheck every month, and he bought blue chip stocks. So if you think about the name blue chip, back in the 1960s and 70s, when this gentleman was acquiring these stocks, that was Coca-Cola, that was GE, that was IBM, possibly, you know, Procter & Gamble, those types of big name stocks, right? So they were buying, he would buy 1 to 2 shares of one of these stocks every paycheck. And so the son was very concerned because as his father got older, he was accumulating stock certificates. Now, this gentleman took the dividends and interest and reinvested them all back into those stocks. And so long story short, the son eventually brought the father in and all of their stock certificates. And a gentleman who never made more than $50,000 a year as a union worker had accumulated over $7.4 million of stock. And that was because of disciplined buying, holding those stocks and then reinvesting those dividends back into those stocks. And we were able to book all of those for him in the account so he didn't lose those stocks.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I was just sharing the story of a gentleman that I worked with a long time ago who helped his dad book over $7.5 million of individual stock certificates. I don't know how many of our listeners remember the days when you actually got individual stock certificates or held those stocks directly at a booking agent like ComputerShare or somebody like that. And that was how people bought stock back then. Either you bought it through a broker at a very high cost or you went directly to the company to buy those shares. And what an exciting lesson in dividend reinvestment, compounding, and staying the course with buying company names that you have a lot of conviction in, and just how that can accumulate over a long period of time. This gentleman was not super wealthy, did not have a tremendous amount of disposable income. It was a one share purchase every month of one of these blue chip stocks. Dividends were automatically used to buy additional shares, and a large amount of wealth over time was created. So really cool story there. So for those who are interested in what options you have with individual equities or stocks, let's say you have a portfolio of five stocks. You have really two options of what you can do with those stocks, right? You can, if they're paying a dividend, and most blue chip, in this case, the gentleman was buying blue chip stocks, which are large companies that typically pay dividends to shareholders. If you own these companies that pay dividends, you really have two options. One can collect the dividend, right? You can have it go into cash. It can either mail you a check, sit in your brokerage account, and then you can use that cash to either purchase additional shares of another stock, take it out and use it, or you can reinvest that in what's called a DRIP program. You can set up to where all of the dividends reinvest back into that individual security. And that's what this gentleman did, is he never took the dividend. He always bought more shares, that one share a month, any dividends, bought more shares. And you can imagine the snowball effect that this gentleman experienced over his lifetime. One of the risks, if you do know family who own individual stock certificates. In my house, we have a Disney stock certificate that is not very valuable. It's more in a frame, and that's okay. We're okay with that because it's a beautiful stock certificate because they don't make them anymore. But if it is actually representing a major financial interest in your portfolio, you might want to consider having it held at a brokerage firm. So if you lost a certificate or it needs to be transferred to another party, it can be done much easier, much more electronic. So very important there. If you have family members, again, who have stock certificates or old DRIP programs directly held through the companies, it might make sense for them to consolidate that with a large custodian that can hold them in a third-party account for them. So I have a great story. One of my mentors at Fidelity, I will not name his name just to keep him out of the ether here, but he made a funny comment when I was coming up. We were talking about active management versus indexing. And I know that's an age-old story, right? Do you buy the index or do you buy active management and try to outperform the index? And we were laughing because he made a comment that he said he's been in this industry for 20 years and nobody wants to own the S&P 500 for more than 10 years. It is human nature to want to outperform the benchmark. And what I experienced with this gentleman and the group of clients that we worked with at the time is that it wasn't about just beating one index. It wasn't about beating one benchmark. It was about building a portfolio that was targeted to meet a rate of return that was acceptable for the goals that they had laid out for themselves. And that concept is really around modern portfolio theory, risk management, and asset allocation. So the story here is how I learned the benefits of asset allocation from this mentor of mine, because he made the comment, nobody wants to own the S&P 500 for more than 10 years. We want to diversify out of U.S. large cap. We want to diversify out of U.S. mid cap. We want to diversify out of international. And we want to have other assets that are going to not correlate with stock markets when times are not equity positive. And so it's human nature to want to outperform. It's human nature to want to have a portfolio that's going to beat an index. But indexing is a good strategy as well. If you're disciplined and you want to have your core assets in S&P 500 index mutual funds or ETFs, if you want to have your portfolio in things that track a benchmark, they're typically lower cost, but you're locked basically into the return that you're going to get. There's no downside protection typically that you would have with active management. And that could be a bumpy road for a lot of investors. So I think it's really important that you understand diversification, asset allocation, and knowing that maybe just putting all of your money in one index or one S&P 500 fund might not give you the experience or the rate of return that you're looking for. You know, this gentleman was really good at what he did. He could build and explain how to diversify portfolios. He used to say, it's like a garden. You want something blooming in your garden every season, right? When my wife and I run our garden, we have stuff that comes up in early spring. We have the most of it that comes up in the summer. We have stuff that comes up in the fall. And it's because as conditions change, we're in a situation where your portfolio needs to be able to perform in different seasons. And that's just a really important concept of investing. Volatility, headlines in the markets, we see it today much faster than we did when I was back with this gentleman in the early 2000s. Markets move at much a faster pace. So that statement about owning the S&P 500 and human nature around owning indices versus active funds continues to be something that we will probably debate for a really long period of time. And I think that's really important to know. We will touch a little bit more on volatility and how to build a core and speculative portfolio. We've got 1 minute left until our next commercial. I think it's important, one last comment about asset allocation is it's not just about stocks and bonds anymore. Modern portfolio theory and asset allocation has evolved to the point where we're adding commodities to the portfolio. Some advisors are looking at cryptocurrencies, real estate, real assets, gold, silver, rare earth materials. These are all new additions to a more modern portfolio asset allocation. Now, we're not using them as much as we're using traditional equities and fixed income across different asset classes and different market capitalizations, but we're looking at adding some really interesting things. We're back testing those. Investment professionals are finding out how to add new asset classes, new types of investments to investor portfolios and how that may add rates of return over a long period of time. We're going to go to a quick commercial and then we'll go from here.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
All right, we are back from our break. I'm Matt Petrozelli, CEO and President of Valley National Financial Advisors, filling in for Lori Siebert tonight. And what I'm doing is I'm talking about my journey and my career journey from being a salesman in New York all the way up to being CEO at Valley National, and the investment stories and lessons learned, and how that might be able to help you connect and understand different investment disciplines and just overall stories about investing, and having a conversation about what that looks like. I want to talk about what are the biggest defining moments of my career, and probably for anybody in my generation's career that's in the financial services business, was the 2008 and 2009 global financial crisis. There are some really great stories now that are out there, whether it's Too Big to Fail or The Big Short. Some really good Hollywood versions of that story and how that whole, real estate market and credit default swap situation almost crushed our economy into a depression. And I had a front row seat for that. And, it was a real telling time because it made us all look at what is our true risk tolerance. Investments is all about how much risk are we willing to take. And I learned during that period that people got very emotional about major volatilities in the market. And other than the short downfall from COVID in 2020, where the market was going down at the same rate it was going down in 2008, that quickly recovered because we were able to get government intervention in there very quickly. Now, in the case of 2008, it took months for TARP, for government intervention. We had an election during that time. There was an extreme amount of volatility. We saw markets move in 5, 10% clips like we had never seen, and that was on a daily basis, both up and down. And I saw individual investors do two things. They either panicked or they stayed the course and used the volatility as an opportunity to double down and invest in things that they knew eventually would come back. And it was a really telling experience. So one of our biggest clients at Fidelity at the time was Lehman Brothers, and we were managing their 401k plan. And we were in a situation where many Lehman Brothers employees by nature owned a lot of company stock in their 401k retirement plan. And this goes to risk and concentration risk. This is a huge risk that people need to be aware of. Concentration risk is when you have more than 5% of your investments in one individual security or investment, okay? And there's obviously risk spectrums here. So like if you have more than 5% of your money in U.S. Treasuries, the risk is probably not the same as having more than 5% of your money in an individual stock. But for people that were had options to use their retirement money to buy company shares, many of them did. In effect, in February of 2007, Lehman Brothers was at its highest share value of $86 a share. And we would talk to some of their people and we would say, look, it might make sense for you to diversify out of Lehman Brothers. And many of them said, no, you're crazy. Why would we want to do that? Lehman Brothers is, the best performing stock on the street. And unfortunately, many of them were completely wiped out during the financial crisis. So this global financial crisis taught me a number of lessons. It taught me how to gauge risk for individual investors, right? Somebody today is going to say, hey, I'm really aggressive. I can tolerate a lot of market fluctuation. But when that market fluctuation comes around, are they truly going to hold true with that investment? Or I want to hold all of this investment because I believe it's bulletproof, or I believe it's never going to go down, and I want to have a hard concentration in that. There's a tremendous amount of risk that if things go the other way, it could be a catastrophic loss for many people. I would say that another big lesson I learned in 2008, 2009 is volatility is really scary. I experienced for the first time people looking differently, feeling differently, worried about their jobs, worried about the economy, worrying about whether or not their life savings was going to be there or not. And it was an eye-opening experience. Today, I'm not scared of volatility. I actually really like it. Volatility to me is an opportunity for us to take advantage of undisciplined investors, to take advantage of opportunities to buy things that we may like at a cheaper cost, and for an opportunity to rebalance and resize what our priorities are as an investor. And so I would say, if you're an investor and you're building a portfolio for the long term, let's talk about how you evaluate your risk, okay? There are a million risk questionnaires now, and with ChatGPT and all this stuff, you can throw all this stuff in there and it'll tell you, you know, if your time horizon's X and your age is Y and your knowledge level is Z, you should be invested in this type of portfolio. But in the end of the day, you've got to live with that decision, and you've truly got to understand to say, how much risk am I willing to take? Am I willing to have sleepless nights over the fact that maybe I'm taking more risk? If markets are steaming ahead like they are right now, should I be more aggressive or less aggressive? Am I comfortable with making 10% a year versus 15% a year, that if the market goes down 25%, I'm comfortable the fact that I'm only going to lose 10%? That's not going to keep me up at night. So those are the questions you need to ask yourself, is how am I personally going to be able to live with risk and volatility? I welcome volatility, and you know, I think there are opportunities for people and for people like us to help our clients invest when there's volatility. There's opportunities to buy real estate when volatility. There's opportunities to buy other assets when there's volatility. So just trying to make sure that you're diversified, you understand your risk profile. Typically, longer-term time horizons, you can stomach more down markets than you can on a shorter-term time horizon. But some people, that's just not them. That's not acceptable for them. And don't let other people push you one way or the other and telling you how much risk you should be taking in your portfolio. 2008, 2009 was just a great lesson for me in that. And, you know, I think that experience in my career set the stages for me to move on to more of a global perspective and then back into a specialized local perspective. And we'll spend the rest of the show talking about a little bit more of what we've been doing and some of the lessons that I've learned as I've transitioned to more of a boutique specialty planning shop, and then obviously into my CEO role and helping my advisors help their clients with their needs every day and what the investment landscape looks like today. So let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and move forward.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back, your Financial Choices listeners. Matt Petruzzelli, CEO and President of Valley National Financial Advisors, filling in for Lori Siebert. She will be back next week, so don't worry about that. We are talking about lessons learned from my 25-year journey in financial services. We've talked a little bit about my startups in New York, and how that was a really interesting training ground. We're just wrapping up on some really core investment philosophies that I've learned at my time at Fidelity and with HSBC Global Bank. And now we're going to talk a little bit about my time at Valley National and some of the things that I've learned at Valley National. And, you know, transitioning from Fidelity to a big global bank and then to a small independent boutique firm, you know, I really appreciated how investors wanted to partner with experts, but also wanted to put their own little flavor in investments, right? Most people just don't want to give all their money to somebody and say, hey, manage it. Most people want to have a say, right? They don't want to sit in first class. They don't want to fly the plane, but maybe they want to be up in the cockpit, right? They want to know how the plane works. They want to have a say in certain things. And, you know, something that I've really learned over the last 15 years at Valley National is that it's okay to have a portion of your portfolio that's speculative, that's you, that's things that you want to invest in, that your family wants to invest in. So I use kind of the 80-20 rule. So if you think about an iceberg, you think about a pyramid, you can use whatever you want. 80% of your assets should be in core investments, okay? Core investments are, you know, high conviction, asset allocation, purposeful investments that are really going to be the foundation. Think about an iceberg, right? That's all under the water. That's the big piece. That's the core of the iceberg. The other 10 to 20%, depending on your age and risk tolerance, and we talked about risk earlier, is that could be a little bit more speculative. So maybe you want to pick some individual stocks. And if you're picking individual stocks, I would say one of the things I've learned is trust your gut. All right. I am a big believer in trusting your gut. Now, you know, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't look at the numbers. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't understand who the management teams of these companies are. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't blindly pick it. But trust your gut, right? So are there products and services that you use as a individual or as a family? Are there games or TV shows or things that your children are really into that they can't live without? Are there industries or areas that maybe you work in or your spouse works in that you understand very well and have an intimate knowledge in regards to what maybe the up-and-coming companies are? Those to me are not foolish bets, and they're not so speculative. They're risk-adjusted, calculated investments. And I think you can take between 10 and 20% of your portfolio at times and potentially allocate it to that. That's an option that you have. If you're creating your own portfolio, it's always great to use your gut, go out and experience. I still do this as I go to the mall or I go to, you know, an area that has a lot of restaurants. And I really feel like that's a bellwether for our local economy. And then if our economy, which I think is a very good representation of what's going on around the rest of the country, because the Lehigh Valley has such a diverse economic group of individuals. We've got blue-collar jobs. We've got small businesses. We've got a number of large corporations and hospitals that have more specialty-related jobs. And they're all consuming and working in this ecosystem of the Lehigh Valley. And it's really fun to get a pulse of where people are shopping, where people are spending money, where people are excited. Do they have disposable income? If they do, why is that the reason? And I think that's really going to help you build a portfolio over time that can weather different markets. Your core portfolio, that's your base asset allocation investments, should always make up the lion's share of that. But the speculative stuff, my experience and what I have learned is trust your gut. Very rarely have I not trusted my gut on those 20% and been disappointed. So knowing that I do my gut research, if it feels right, if it smells right, I review the company, I look them up, Maybe I ask some people who are in the industry about it. I look at the management team, how long they've been there. And I just make sure I do a little bit of due diligence. And then it can be an exciting speculative investment. You won't be as emotionally tied to it. And it's fun to watch those flowers bloom, so to speak. One of the things that is really interesting about transitioning to Valley National from a large firm is I used to say the words, I can't give tax advice. And Valley National is very unique. Lori talks about it all the time on her show because she, is a CPA. We have CPAs at Valley National. We did not have CPAs at large investment companies that were providing clients with tax advice. In fact, we were not allowed to give tax advice. And then I went to a firm where somebody would ask me a tax question, and I would say, yeah, we can give you tax advice. And so I think taxes and how taxes intertwine with investments is such an important topic. And so I want to talk about a few concepts. And these were things that I really learned while I was at Valley National, because the firms that I was at before didn't talk about investments at all. Or I'm sorry, didn't talk about taxes at all. They didn't train us on taxes. They didn't have tax software to do tax projections and tax planning. So really, it's important to set your portfolio up in a tax-efficient perspective. So you want to make sure that you have money in tax-deferred accounts, which means that money grows tax-deferred until you take it out at a certain age, in which hopefully your income tax bracket is lower than when you're earning it, and then that money is taxed at a lower rate. And money that is taxable every year, you want to choose investments that don't spit off large capital gains distributions, short-term capital gains distributions, unless you decide to take those distributions. So investments like ETFs, individual securities, low turnover mutual funds, index funds, those types of things can help you be a little bit more tax efficient in accounts where you pay tax on the investment, income, dividends, and capital gains every year. And then you want to play a game where, how does that actually impact your tax brackets? How much gains can you take without going to a higher tax bracket? And then understanding how that impacts you as you get into retirement. Are you bridging between age 60 and 65? Am I getting health care through a state provider or a federal provider? And what are the income thresholds that I need in order to make that work? And so making sure that your portfolio is built long before you get to that situation is really, really important. I do believe that income tax preparation with AI and things is going to be more of a commoditized process. But the nuance of understanding your income tax situation and setting your investments up to be most tax efficient and taking advantage of things like qualified charitable distributions and Roth conversions and building a portfolio for the long term is really, really important. And so Lori talks about that every week on our show. We're in tax season. We're talking about a lot of tax topics, so it would just behoove of me not to mention that. I am not a tax expert by background, so learning that piece was such an important arrow in my quiver in my journey of 25 years. If I hadn't transitioned to Valley National, I'm not sure I would have been able to learn that. And how fortunate I am that people like Lori Siebert and my firm that can help me, help our advisors, and help our clients understand how to do that. It's been a great situation. So it's always that adage, right? It's not what you make, it's what you keep. And so that can be really, really important, especially when you're in the process of rebalancing portfolios, right? Think about a stock that you may own for 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, and now the capital gain on that stock is $50,000, $100,000. Well, if you sell that, a large share or a good chunk of that profit, depending on your income tax bracket, could go to be paying capital gains taxes. How do you rebalance your portfolio every year in order to make sure that certain positions, certain gains don't get out of control to where the tax tail is going to wag the dog, so to speak? So I think that's a really important aspect of portfolio construction And in today's world where our tax code, although they say it's going to be more simplified, I'm not sure it really is. So that's an important game to know how to play. It's an important lesson that I've learned in investing. Another thing that's been very interesting in my journey is at Valley National is I've seen the fee compression and the cost of investing has dropped dramatically. When I first got into the financial services business in New York, everything was a high sell, high commission based product. Clients paid a lot of commission up front in order to invest in products and services. And as a result, the salespeople got paid up front and there really was, you know, not much incentive to continue to manage that process moving forward. I think today what we see is we see low costs of ownership for investments, which is really important. Other than individual stocks and bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, those investment products have internal expense ratios associated with them. And it's really important to understand how they work. And what we've seen over the last 15 years is that there's been a tremendous amount of fee compression and consolidation around investment costs. And the internal expense ratios for managing investments that you may hold in your portfolio. And that is such a big win for the investor today. Technology, competition, that has really helped lower the cost of ownership and make more investments more accessible to the mass market than ever before. And so whether you use a financial advisor or don't use a financial advisor, you always want to be cautious and understand what the costs of those investments are, what the internal expense ratios are, any sales loads or transaction costs that may be associated with purchasing those funds, any fees that your advisor may collect, and are they in line with, you know, benchmarks and peers. You want to ask questions of how do you set your fees and why do you charge the fees that the fees that you do. If you're doing your investments on your own, if you get out of those investments, are there illiquidity lockups? Can you get all your money out? Can you get all your money out without a penalty? These are all the questions that you want to ask and navigate. But the good news is the tricky products, but a lot of the high commission, high sales charge products, just by technology, just by the way our business is moving in a fee compression environment, those are really coming down and going by the way of the dinosaur. And I think our investing public, what I've seen, is that the investing public has become more intelligent. We have radio shows like Your Financial Choices. We have CNBC and people like Jim Cramer who are out there that with really big platforms talking about what's going on in the investment industry and talking to the public about what's important. And I think, you know, costs, taxes, asset allocation, risk management, diversification, you know, these are time-tested lessons learned. And now that I'm in the position that I'm in, helping our advisors and them helping our clients deploy those strategies and educate those clients on those strategies and to be able to come on the show and talk about those strategies for those that may be doing it themselves, I think is a great thing. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on in today's world.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. I'm Matt Petrozelli, President and CEO of Valley National Financial Advisors, filling in for Lori Siebert, who will be back next week. We've been talking about my 25-year journey in financial services and trying to pull out some lessons learned, some tips and tricks that I've learned along the way. And, you know, we talked about sales in New York. We talked about learning the craft at Fidelity and learning to become an advisor and really some of the time-tested risk management, asset allocation, reinvestment stories around stock certificates and, you know, not owning the S&P 500 for 10 years because it's just too, it's not in human nature to do that. And the volatility and scariness of 08, 09 and what that taught us about human nature around risk management and staying the course. We also talked a little bit about using your gut. If you're going to be building your own portfolio, you need to have 80 to 90% of your money under that iceberg, right? But the tip, the last 10 to 20%, use your gut when choosing investments. What do you like? What do you enjoy? What does your family use? What do your kids do? I watch my kids. My kids are 11 and 8. And to see what they're interested in, what they consume. And it doesn't have to be a new product, right? My kids love McDonald's, right? You know, we don't want them eating it every day. But hey, look, you know, these are the things that you want to be aware of. Where do they want to eat? What movies do they want to see? What TV shows do they consume? What media personalities do they surround themselves with? Those can help you build a little bit more of a risk-adjusted speculative return rather than just chasing trends, right? Trends like cryptocurrency, which are very hard to understand and are very new to market. You know, trends like rare earth minerals, commodities, things that have a little bit more of a track record, but still can be very volatile and uncorrelated to stocks and bonds. So again, building your own portfolio, trust your gut. You're much smarter than you think you are. Trust your gut. You know what will be right, and you know the amount of risk that you want to take. So in the last kind of 10 minutes of the show, I want to talk a little bit about my role as CEO at Valley National and really what makes me tick and, you know, some of the things that I've learned about investing and how that can help you as an investor. We talked a little bit about price and we talked a little bit about the fact that there's been a tremendous amount of fee compression. In fact, most people today through different custodians, different platforms, whether that be Robinhood or Schwab. I'm not advocating for anyone in particular. Those are just examples. But you could buy individual stocks and bonds for free. There's no cost to doing that or very little cost to doing that. And I think as a firm that manages $1.35 billion in assets, we have an obligation to build an elite product set. All right. And what does an elite product set mean? We want our advisors to be armed with what we think are the best of breed investment ideas and opportunities to bring to our clients every day. And that's really what makes me tick. How do we bring the best tools, whether they're planning tools, investment products and services, insurance products and services, tax-related planning software and services? How do we bring that to our clients every day? And that's really ultimately what I'm passionate about and what I do every day. How do we help the community invest? Our underwriting of your financial choices and Lori's participation in the show for 10 plus years is such an important aspect of what we want to do and help the community and help people that have questions. Not just on investing, that's kind of my strong suit and that's kind of my area of expertise, but also in other areas of financial planning, whether that be Social Security questions, whether that be tax-related questions, whether that be charity-related questions, whether that be insurance-related questions. So we want to make sure we have the answers and that we help the community understand that through our charitable endeavors, our radio show endeavors, but also through our client endeavors. Let's talk a little bit about an elite product set and things that we look at, things that are in the market today. Again, I want to just put a disclosure out there that I'm not advocating for any particular investment. You want to work with your individual advisor or with your family if you're doing it yourself to make sure that you're vetting and choosing all the investments. But I just would like to talk a little bit about some investment trends that we're seeing. And, you know, it would be exciting to see where they go. So when I first got to Valley National, mutual funds were king, all right, or queen. Mutual funds were top dogs. And mutual funds, by nature, are investments that are managed typically by a portfolio manager, and your money is invested by that portfolio manager for an internal cost, and they typically are buying and selling individual securities on your behalf within that mutual fund. It's priced once a day, and every month, every year, you see specifically what that investment manager's done. If they've done well, they might be passing on a capital gain to you. If they have not done well, they might not be passing a loss onto you or a capital loss. And so most people were buying mutual funds. Now people are buying more ETFs and individual equities for a number of different reasons. The first is because mutual funds, because they have a large group of people managing the investments, typically have a higher expense. And because they're mainly actively managed, there are some mutual fund index funds out there, but because they're being actively managed, they can pass on capital gains, short and long term, and dividend income that we're not expecting to become taxable investments for investors that are in taxable accounts. ETFs function a little bit differently, where they represent a basket of securities, large cap growth, mid cap value, international, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the only time that there's a taxable event is when the investor sells the investment. There might be dividend income or other things, but you'll know about that. It's stated in the prospectus as to what the dividend yield is going to be. So ETFs now have become a very popular investment opportunity. As my chief investment officer, Bill Henderson, will say, mutual funds are going to become extinct. We're going to start seeing ETFs become actively managed ETFs, where they're going to be a hybrid between a mutual fund and an ETF, so have the tax benefits of an ETF, but some of the investment flexibility of an actively managed mutual fund. These are newer products to market, and I'm excited to see where they're going to go. Many of them don't really have a tremendous track record for right now, but we're starting to see these come to market. We're also starting to see what I like to call illiquid or alternative investments become accessible to the mass markets. So when I first got into the business, if you wanted to invest in a hedge fund, if you wanted to invest in private equity, if you wanted to invest in a large real estate fund, if you wanted to invest in private credit, these are all what we like to call alternative investments, which means that they invest in things that are not stocks and bonds. They invest in real estate. They invest in private equity. They invest in private credit. They invest in other types of long-short strategies. And in the past, you had to be a very high net worth and accredited investor to get access to these types of investments. At times, some of the entry levels were $500,000, $1 million, $2 million in assets in order to get access to these strategies. What we've seen now is there are firms that are now offering these types of strategies for as low as a $2,500 minimum investment, $5,000, $10,000. So they're opening alternative strategies. Note that some of these alternative strategies may have liquidity barriers. Now, what are liquidity barriers? Liquidity barriers means that you're not able to pull all of your money out at one time. So typically, these are longer-term investments. There's no cost penalty to get out. They don't charge you a fee or anything, but they just won't let you pull 100% of your money out in certain situations. So there are interesting restrictions on these alternative investments, but great news. These are now available to individuals, not just the ultra rich and the ultra accredited investors. All right. We're also seeing very interesting alternative investments in regards to tax efficiencies. There are large investment shops now that are opening their doors for very low dollar amounts, where they will pick and choose a pool of individual securities, usually stocks or ETFs, and they will buy and sell those on a daily basis on behalf of the client and make sure that they pass on as little capital gains as possible. These types of investments are still relatively new, but again, the accessibility of getting access to these investments through big investment firms like JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs are very new. And again, when we talk about building an elite product set at my firm, these are the things that we're looking at on a daily basis, is how do we get access to things that were not accessible for investors that now can be accessible to investors? And are they cost efficient? Are they going to produce the rate of return that we want for our investors and our individuals? And are they going to help them achieve their goals and dreams? And so it's really important. And I think with the invention of AI and the use of AI, the ability to vet these investments, the ability to understand what's out at market is more accessible than it ever has been. And so when we look at this journey, this 25-year lessons, right? We started with, you know, commission sales and cutting your teeth to, you know, really learning the core fundamentals of diversification, dividend reinvestment and compounding, not holding an index for 10 years because most human nature is not related to doing that, understanding risk and going through traumatic times of 08 and 09, right? What does that teach us about how to build a portfolio? What does that teach us as investors? How comfortable are we really doing things? Don't be pressured into building a portfolio that everybody says you have to. You have to take this amount of risk because of your age and your time horizon. That's important. That's really important and should be thought about. But you need to trust your gut when building your portfolio. You need to make sure that you're using investments that you like, that you understand. Take that 10 to 20% of your money. Make sure it's in things that you like. Make sure it's in things that your kids like. Have a family discussion around it. Get excited about that 10 to 20%. And the rest of that money, you know, you want to set it and forget it and really let that bake over time. And then getting into tax efficiency, more complexity. That's where my career started to take off at Valley National, learning the nuances, working with people like Lori Siebert, who could teach me the nuances of tax and Social Security and really detailed financial planning, right? And really kind of sharpening that sword. And then today, what's the future look like? You know, we're in a situation where things are moving very quickly. Markets, whether they are stock markets, both domestically and internationally, have done extremely well. We are on one of the biggest bull runs of our time. And, you know, making sure we understand how to get investors diversified in things that maybe in the past they would never even think about investing in because they are now available to them. So lots of stories, lots of exciting things to learn over the career. But in the end of the day, it's brought me to where I can make a lot of answers. I can, you know, answer a lot of questions and really work to build an elite product set for our firm, but also hopefully come out on a show like Your Financial Choices and give some great education, some time to you guys. Again, I want to say if you have questions that you'd like answered for me, we did not take live callers today, but if you have questions for me or questions for Lori, you can always reach out to us on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com and send us an email, send us a comment. We'd be more than happy to get back to you and go from there.
You've been listening to Matt Petrozelli, guest host today for Your Financial Choices here on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.